All right. Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
Man, we've had a lot of weeks of football, but this week is a very meaningful week.
Oh, yeah.
In the city of Muskegon. For football.
Man,
that cross-town rivalry, baby. Well, I guess it's a rivalry. I'm going to say it's a rivalry.
Well, you got to go to the last 3 years is a rivalry?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, last three. Because I went back and did some research, and we started playing in 52, and I think the record now is –
Lopsided.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think they have 7 wins in the series out of 40 games, they got 7 wins. So, but still, in order to have a rivalry, each team has to win a game, you know, on an off-on basis, right? Because if you run in the tables, it's not really a rivalry. So,
that's right. So then the last time Muskegon beat Mona Shores, which was the year before last, was like 52-0?
53-0 was last, you know, they won last year. 21-7,
yep.
Which I thought we really should have won that game. But
they called a touchdown back, didn't they?
Of course.
Yep.
It always happens. But other than that, you know, that 53-0, that they won a championship that year.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Motor Shore, it helped them.
The only loss on their schedule was a 53-0 drubbing by the Big Reds.
Wow.
And I looked at all the local sports writers and their picks for that game.
I saw all Mona Shores.
Nobody picked Muskegon. And that's good.
So you telling me you're going to do the school that's in the inner city of Muskegon? And
the winningest school in the state of Michigan.
Don't stand a chance against Mona Shores. That's what you basically saying.
That's what they said, man.
And I can say like this. You never underestimate nobody.
No. Not a game of this magnitude, right?
Because you throw out the records.
Throw out the records, man. Okay? And for this season, really, other than the Cass Tech game, you know, and then they got the same kind of treatment by King, right?
That's right. So we like going in even teams.
So I see it as a game that's going to come down to the speed of Muskegon versus the potential passing of Mona Shores. There's nobody running the football on us. Not going to happen. You got to throw the ball to beat us. And that's what even in the Cass Tech game.
Yes, sir.
That's what beat us was their passing. So I'm pretty sure that their game plan is going to come out throwing the football, which is good because we'll be ready. We'll be ready. When we broadcast next week, we'll be talking about how those Big Reds took them down. That's simple. But it's just good for the program because the last 3 weeks, right, 60-0 shutouts. And we just want some competitive, especially heading into the playoffs. We want some competition, right?
Yeah.
Because next week we got Reese Puffer, and the week after that is Zeeland East. And, you know, we'll beat them. So this is the only game that you could possibly do a coin flip, right?
That's right.
Coin flip. But I'm excited. I'm ready for it. And the community is, so.
Yeah, the community, we ready. I'm ready to see what time it is.
So when they listen to this on Saturday, that game would have been played, and they'll know what the outcome was.
Look, I seen, a social media post where they posted what you said, the 52-7, right?
Yeah.
Then they posted Shane Fairfield has never lost to Mona Shore. I was like, hold on, he went to Catholic.
Right. Yeah, when he played at Catholic, they never lost.
So I said, that was Muskegon way of like rubbing it in. Like, look. And the coach, even though he went to another high school, he never lost.
So never lost, man. Nope.
That was like a cheap shot, like, wow, take that. Because y'all think y'all just going to beat us. I was like, but all in fun, in the labor of the game, and both coaches getting ready. It's fun and it spoils of playing this game because it's a regular season game.
Yep.
And it gets everybody ready for the next season, which is the playoff season, which is the real season.
Yep. And 3 weeks away.
These are both good teams.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They're a good team.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun to watch both. Yep. But it's like just seeing the hoopla around what's about to go on. It's fun.
Yeah.
That's what I like to watch. Yeah. I like just being a fan and saying, okay. And then just seeing the community wrap around the kids. That's,
oh my gosh,
because
this
was all about kids, man.
Yeah.
For me, everything's about the kids.
No doubt about it. So, yeah. You know, weather may have a factor, but regardless, it rains on both sides of the football. So that's not an excuse. So it's going to be interesting. Yep. I can't wait, man. I'm ready.
Fun, ready. Interesting.
Yep. So, yeah. And we had Big Ten football.
Yes, we did.
Last weekend.
Yep. I went to homecoming. I went to Michigan State's homecoming. That was fun. Hanging out with the black alumni and the alumni. Got to see a chance to see one of our former players in Muskegon, Liza Winston, playing a scrimmage.
Okay.
You know, looking pretty good, looking lean, like a machine. Then going to the game, I saw Driga. You know,
Driga? Okay.
Driga hanging out with the team still, you know. See, when you're an alumni, you can do them things. You can just go and float through and get in free still into the football games and everything.
Right.
So I was able to see them. It was a nice environment, still social distance, but it was fun. We didn't have our nightly party for homecoming, but we got to see some people I ain't seen in a long time. And,
yeah.
You know, just being able to walk that space, but then also being able to see players that you've helped with this community get somewhere. When I say this community, like Muskegon, and being in Lansing when I was there, when nobody was on the team from Muskegon.
Okay.
And now being able to see players that's from this community, and I'm walking on campus, and they're like, hey, Coach Johnson.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's y'all. Yeah. And I'm laughing like I laugh and say that that's a blessing.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, being a student to walking on campus and somebody say, hey, there go Coach Johnson, and laughing and cracking jokes and being able to see them and knowing their staff and everything. So that was fun, and my wife enjoyed it. So
good.
Football
good weekend,
team.
Man.
I'm proud to say I'm a Spartan because we not playing conservative football no more. It looked like it's real trouble in East Lansing, whoever come through there. Because the way Hayward, the running back, Reed is on some speed.
Yeah,
quarterback looks great.
Yeah. What's his name?
Thorne. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, Thorne on your side.
Yeah. So the Big Ten is coming out to be great, man. I mean, you know, we got Martinez of Ohio State.
Yes, right.
He broke the starting lineup now. And
he's looking good.
He's getting a lot of notice. Yeah, and,
humble kid, too. So, hey.
Oh, yeah, man. Yep.
Billy great Roberts. Kid. All these kids is in college.
Jordan Porter.
I would like to call – who's that back? Jefferson, you can come back to Michigan State now.
Ladarius.
Yeah, you come back. You looking like the running back we wanted you always to be.
Yeah.
I mean,
it wasn't the right system, man.
Antonio didn't know what he was doing when he had the boy. So Tucker would love to have a running back like that.
Yeah, the one running back he has now, I guess he never hardly got any kind of accolades, no real big offers.
Nope.
And he was, you know, he just told the coach, man, I appreciate you giving me a shot, man, taking a chance on me. And then Coach said, well, I appreciate you taking a chance on me.
Because he's looking good. Walker looking good.
Yeah, Walker. That's his name.
He was in the depth. He was just lost in the depth chart. Now he the man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He the man.
Man, so, I love that. But like you said, hanging in or finding a new place you can go and still thriving and being the best you possibly can be, it's fun to be and see.
Yeah. That's good, man. We just want to see these programs flourish, do well, and our kids have a great experience. Get that degree, come out of school, become productive citizens, and be, you know, well represented. So that's absolutely fantastic. So, and our Lions are the Lions, right?
Yeah.
Still looking for my nephew. He puts post every Sunday, Lamar Chapman, about did the Lions win? And my grandson, I was reading it to him. He's like 3 years old.
Yeah.
He say, not yet.
And I'm gonna say this. I'm like, I watched the game. I think I had to go to the laundromat or something. So I'm watching the game, and I'm like, oh, the Lions coming on in the last 6 minutes of the game. Like, why?
They always make that comeback and fall short.
And then couldn't catch the ball. But I'm like, you could have did that earlier. If it's that easy in the last 8 minutes to get 14 points and then possibly get 21 with 2 minutes left.
Yeah, man. They did that against the Ravens, right?
Yeah.
Same situation, man. You know, it's so weird is that we see the change in coaching staffs, but yet the product doesn't look like it ever changes. You know, they shipped Stafford out, and you thought, okay, you know, we'll bring some new blood in and see if that makes a difference. But it still looks like the Lions.
Stafford undefeated where he at.
So no, he bit the dust this week, but still.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing well.
Playing well,
I mean, man. I take
3-1 versus 0-4.
0-4, yeah.
In the sunny California weather.
Right. So, yep. Lions are the same old Lions. Man. Not to you know, beat up on our Lions fans, because I want them to win, right? We from Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, all that, not be I a mean, diehard Lions fan. Yeah. But I'm not diehard, for the Lions.
But I'm always Lions and Pistons first.
Yeah. Yeah, we're always trying to get them an opportunity to
the NBA preseason started. You know, Pistons won last night against San Antonio.
Okay.
LeBron didn't play. You know, everybody ain't playing. Trevor Ariza already got hurt, but he was hurt before. He had foot surgery.
Yeah. I think he's going to be limited as to the amount of minutes that he
played. I think they signed Trevor Ariza to save him for the playoffs for the defender.
Mm-hmm.
So they made him have his foot surgery. He already had it, but he probably already had it. But they're going to let him just rehab and get in the best shape of his life. So when the 42 games come, when he halfway in the season, come spell Carmelo Anthony for us.
Mm-hmm.
And let Carmelo Anthony sit down. Whoever else got the old legs need to sit down and be ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, that's going to be part of that rotation, right, of keeping guys fresh and keeping them ready for the playoffs. Because, you know, that's really what they're playing for.
Yeah, that's that move around, how you move around. So.
Yeah. So, but, you know, then speaking of the NBA, Wiggins, who had not gotten vaccinated and basically was told, you know.
Yeah, COVID on him.
No, he didn't get COVID yet. But, you know, he's in the boat with Kyrie, right? Kyrie saying no, right? In the state of New York, it's mandated it. So you're playing for Brooklyn. So you can't play.
Any home game.
Unless you're getting vaccinated. You can't practice.
Uh-oh.
So Wiggins basically gave him. He said, it's like, well, I have 114 million reasons why I need to be vaccinated. Talking about his contract. He said, hey, that's what it boils down to. I am not going to stand out here and say I'm not going to get vaccinated and leave all that money on the table. It makes no sense. Okay? But Kyrie, you know, Kyrie is Kyrie, man.
He hard-headed.
He's a tough nut to crack. So
yeah, he's like, I don't care.
And that's why they was trying to move him, right? They was telling it was going to be a trade with the Sixers.
That's what I was saying. I was like, him for Ben Simmons is the best thing.
And
Doc Rivers coaching Kyrie Irving?
Yeah.
You want that? That's like Chris Paul again. That's better. And Chris Paul's good. But Chris Paul not Kyrie Irving.
Nope.
And Chris Paul is the Hall of Fame, top five point guards under 6 foot.
And I think, you know, that deal may not be a done deal, man, because, you know, Durant was saying, okay, no, don't trade him. So management said, all right, we'll pump the brakes. But at some point in time, we're going to have to make a decision. If he doesn't come and play or get vaccinated and get cleared to practice, right, so you can't even practice, then we got to move on, man.
He Ben Simmons. You got to move for Ben Simmons.
You
got
to go take Ben.
And put Ben in point guard. Ben Simmons in point guard. You straight.
Yeah. So that saga is not over with Kyrie. Always something with Kyrie.
Man, that's rough. Man, speaking of saga's over, I'm gonna start off right here with what we got. Look, major changes to student loan forgiveness may come this week. Now, they got this article. It's broken down in several situations, right? So I was looking at where my life fit in. So I got some student loans. So I got like 3 years left on mine, right?
Okay.
So student loan cancellation, major changes. Now listen, I was like, whoa. Count prior student loan payments toward student loan forgiveness. If you had any previous student loans that you made student loan forgiveness but were not counted, now it's possible that these payments will be counted. Now stop. Right now I'm accounted for, I think, 80 payments. Or like I'm at 7 years right now for myself. And, you know, 10 years you get cancellation. Really, I got 129 payments.
Wow.
Because they told me certain ones didn't count. So now this new bill come through. Because I don't miss a payment.
Okay.
I make sure I've been making a payment ever since I got qualified for student loan forgiveness. So I've been making student loan forgiveness payments since 2013. That's 7 to 8 years, right?
Right.
But before that, I was making payments. And they was telling me, that don't count. That don't count. That don't count. I got like 48 payments out there that they told me they didn't count. I think almost 51.
Wow. That's not cool, man.
But they the new law that they about to try to sign in say, count prior student loan payments towards student loan forgiveness. That's one of them. I'm like, uh-oh.
Okay.
That's a clean wipe for me.
Yes.
I'll take it if it happens. When it happens, I mean. Now, number two, count prior student loan payments made for federal loans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you got your federal loans. That's not Department of Education. Well, you got the subsidized, unsubsidized. That I wouldn't say that's a private company, but they the ones when you get on your promissory note, you can get a loan.
Right.
If you made payments for them, they would be counted towards your 120 forgiveness.
Okay.
So they're trying to figure out any way they can help somebody get a payment if they've been making a payment.
Right.
Right? Now, number three, listen to this one. Get credit for student loan forgiveness if you used wrong student loan payment program.
Mm.
Now, I know a lot of people that I've helped.
Predatory type lending.
Yeah,
to student
loans. I've helped a lot of people get they student loans from them people like them Navions and Sally Mays that they was making payments. They was telling me it don't count. Well, no, I remember I had a lady, she was making payments for 5 years. It was like, that don't count. So now I think she's been in the program probably 6 years. She's going to be free and clear.
And she should be.
Because they said she was in the wrong repayment program.
No.
They want you to be, because like, how can you be a wrong if you qualify? Because it's income-based and it's the repay. It's the interest only. So I'm like, hold on. You got that's wrong.
That is. On all levels, yeah. It's wrong.
So I look at that. So that's they're going to give you credit. Number four. Student loan payments made before student loan consolidation also count. That was another one, Tony, where somebody making a payment, they said, oh, your loans are not consolidated.
Okay, you got too many loans. You got three or four loans spread out.
But then you making payments, right?
Yeah.
But they said if it was only consolidated, it'd count towards forgiveness. That means if you're making one, it'd count. That's the old model that I filled up under, too. So I got payments before that, too.
Okay.
So I'm like, uh-oh. Now, my thing is I'm worried about, and I got a couple more here, is somebody gonna lose my paperwork, but I got all my paperwork too. I know
right.
What I've been making because I'm really diligent when I've been filing taxes with all my student loan payments. All my years I got taxes. So all I gotta do is check all my old taxes and pull my student loan payments.
Yeah.
So yeah. I've been making them.
Yeah, give me a review. We can see. I can show you.
I would love to get that. Being walking back into the home buying market again and say I don't owe my student loans.
That would be awesome.
That credit score would be 800, like I'll be looking like you. It's 800 world. I'll take it. And see what people be thinking. This is what people would think. Credit score is good. Yeah, but how many years?
Okay.
How many years have you kept an 800? How many years have you kept that 750? Now I'm in the 700 club for what, the last month?
Yeah. Yeah, you're a newbie. You're a rookie.
Yeah, you got to have that longevity. Yeah,
track record.
Yep, track record. So number six, right? It say student loan forgiveness may be relaxed in these areas too. Expanding the definition of public service because a lot of people didn't qualify. They said 2% was getting it. Providing credit for payments even if a student loan borrower didn't make student loan payments due to forbearance, deferment, or other financial hardship. So they don't get credit for somebody if they was in a hardship. Like you worked that job, you was a teacher. And I understand your income went a lot, but you was a teacher the whole time.
You got credit.
You should get credit for those years of service.
America now that's promise.
That's a real forgiveness.
Yeah.
Then another one says creating a formal process of student loan borrowers who are rejected for student loan forgiveness to appeal their decision and correct any errors.
Mm-hmm.
Some people didn't qualify. Oh, they don't qualify for this program. I make too much money. I do this. I do that. Like, how can you make too much money?
I like that to be explained.
Yep. I ain't never heard anybody making too much money. Giving credit for student loan payments for student loan borrowers who paid late or in installments. Here you go right here. This happened to me. When I first graduated, my student loan payment was like $300. I'm like, I'm trying to make that. I ain't got no job. I'm like,
fresh out of college.
So this is what I tell them because it's 6 months separation. I was like, I put $50 on it. You know, me being a fool, not knowing what I know about credit now, I'm putting $50 on it every month. And then one time I look up tax time, they take my whole taxes.
Right.
Those are payments.
That's considered a payment. Yes, sir.
I'm free and clear, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm going to for my community, I'm going to do some more homework to let you know that's where it's at. But in these six ways, if you see me in the community, ask you, what was them six ways you were talking about on the radio? I'll share what me and Tony was talking about. But I just want to fulfill our community that the changes are coming. And for us, and I know you love this, when the government be talking about printing up money, the inflation part. So this is a way, a loophole. If you move the student loans and you figure out not how to default them, but how to get them off the federal government, move them, and find a legitimate partner, but also forgive millions of people in the movement of the student loans. Do you know that's how much debt you can alleviate like that? So, like, because you know how it go when it come to houses.
No different.
Like, the title companies buy the promissory notes, right?
Yep.
You be like, oh, this mortgage is being held by such and such. You still owe this much, but we're going to have your paperwork in the next month. You just now you'll make your payments to this company.
Yep.
So what they about to do is the shell game with the student loans, what they about to do is they're going to cancel so many ones that's going to be forgiven, but they're going to move it to this whole new company. So now it's going to look like, okay, we moved all these debt, all this debt off the books as we transferred the wealth. So it go from, this how it looks, this how I look at it. When I think about student loans, Tony, it's like this. When the government holding it and you got these companies, the government gets to be able to get your payment, but it's the interest also that you're not paying on that they can get another loan off of to hire people and to make money off of. So now when the government moves that, if they're going to move it to a federal program or private company, they're still going to move a lot of money off their books without having to default.
Yeah, and it is the right thing to do.
Yes, okay? It is.
For the simple reason, I think that
save a country millions of dollars.
The education, the upper level education in this country has probably taken advantage of underserved people.
They lied to them.
Okay? We're not talking about the kids that don't have to go get loans, you know, parents make enough money, they can pay their, you know, pay their tuition, room and board and housing, but this is more so for those individuals that has totally been underserved by this country that's trying to do better in life and get these loans, right, in order to get an education, get a better job. Now, we've burdened them with this huge expense of going to school when it shouldn't have been that way at all, right?
And they lied to them. They took the trades away and put the college in front.
Yeah. You know, so it's sort of like trying to, you know, fix a wrong because it was wrong, right? I mean, take yourself, for instance.
Yes.
When you look at, you know, where you came from, your parents, you know, they didn't have enough money to pay for your education, right? So the only alternative you had were to take out these loans in order for you to get a job and have some kind of a future.
Man, I had to navigate. I'm going to tell you right now, I had to navigate the system.
Okay.
And if I didn't know how to navigate the system, if my father didn't fight in World War II, if I didn't qualify for the Pell Grant, if I didn't know about a Perkins loan, and then when I had to get a loan, it was like I had to get it, but I exhausted all my other resources that I know the average man would not have done.
Right.
I know it.
Man, come on.
I know it. The luck I fell into, like my father never using his GI Bill and me able to use it because all my 14 brothers and sisters either went to the Army or they did trades or they got a job, and I said, I'm going to go to college. I was able to use that GI Bill, and he come from World War II. Yep. That's like a unicorn walking through the neighborhood.
So
that ain't happening.
Without that, right? If you didn't have that, the burden of debt would have probably deterred you from going.
It
would have
been more than what it was. I mean, I had a substantial amount. I probably would have been in that $400,000,
which is wrong.
But I know people that got $400,000. Okay, loans. I know them.
That's just not right. Okay, and they're probably, like I said, that they're from an underserved community.
And they doctors, they lawyers.
Okay,
they carrying $400,000. They not all black. They not all white. They from different backgrounds, and they carrying loads. I'm talking about 400,000 people.
So
that are successful.
Yeah. So basically, the educational system became a money making instrument for banks and other lending institutions.
Yep.
They was making money off the backs of the students.
Yeah, man. I'm going to ask you this question. So now they talking about raising the debt ceiling.
Yep.
Like, go print some more money up.
Yep.
Or let it just bounce. But now if they let it bounce.
No, what they're saying is that the United States would default.
Yeah, that's the word, default. Okay.
They would default on a lot of the loans or the money that they borrowed. So that kind of destroys, they're no different than we are. The credit rating, right? The United States government has a credit rating when they go out on the open market to sell bonds and instruments like that to get money. So the reason to raise the debt ceiling is to allow the current administration time to hopefully get their programs into place that's going to generate all this additional tax revenue that's going to come in to help pay for the deficit, right? Because we got, looking at your table, help wanted everywhere, right? Everybody's looking for workers. But yet there's another need that we have to serve, and this administration is trying to address that through the infrastructure bills, along with the clean energy bills and all these other kind of things that's going to help generate new revenue. Okay, we just bought, you know, we're into a hole from a situation where supply chain is dried up. All these people are not working, if you will, for whatever reason. So the revenue's not coming. Taxation, you know, that's how the government get their money, when people work and pay taxes. So when you have a shortness of workers, skilled workers, they don't have the revenue. So the plan is to come out with all these other programs to help get our workforce trained so they can get out and get these jobs and become tax-paying individuals, and then also tax the rich and the wealthy at a fair rate to generate revenue to operate this country and pay down the deficit. That's the whole crust behind raising the debt limit. It's, you know, you got to do it. You have to do it.
Wow.
But, you know, it's turned into a political issue, unfortunately. But it's still, I think you agree that it's the right thing to do for this country.
You got to pay for Social Security and stuff.
Still got to pay for Social Security. Yeah. And the only way you pay for that is by people working, getting paychecks. That's how that gets paid.
You're
for.
Right. That's buckled the system. And then what the Republicans did when they did it for the wealthy.
Right, when they did the tax break.
Yeah,
so that created another deficit. Right?
Oh my goodness.
Because they're not paying the additional taxes that they were. And then he's claimed that we're going to give middle class America a tax too. So their theme was that if you give them a tax cut, they're going to spend more money, which is going to help the economy. But it didn't work. The only thing that happened was corporations got all this cash now because of the tax breaks, and they just funneled it overseas.
They sure did. They
moved. It won't be taxed at any point in time by the U.S. government.
They moved their operations.
Yeah, a lot of them moved operations or their headquarters, right? You can move your headquarters where now whatever country you're in, that's the tax rate that you're basically working off of is whatever country that is.
Yeah, and how they do that, we was just talking about that with some of our students. Our social studies teacher, Joe Urban, he's good. He said what they'll do is they'll create an 8x10 room in another country, and they'll
call it their home office.
Yeah, and somebody will sit in that room for 24 hours. It's their job, and they collect the check.
That's it.
And all the checks come to that room, but then all the operations can be in America.
In America or Mexico or South America, you know, Vietnam, wherever. So it is a huge issue, right, that unfortunately I don't think average Americans understand that. You know, but the corporate, you know, the corporate mavericks, the politicians, they know what it is. They know.
Yep. Man, it's a deep topic. But look, speaking of deep topics and taxes and people getting stuff taken, a beachfront property taken from a black family a century ago may soon be returned. And they're talking about in 1924. A flourishing beach resort for black people along the Southern California coast was seized by the local city government through eminent domain.
Yep.
So the cities, they didn't give them no money for it.
They
though.
Gave them nothing.
They just took it.
They just took it.
Eminent domain, they have to pay you market value for that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so they got to do some backtracking. But what I found out in the article that I have, $75 million they saying at the time. But then I've heard numbers of $300 billion.
Yeah, they've used some of these real estate professors.
Equations, yeah.
Can talk about what the worth of the property would have been in today's dollars based on the fact that they had over 100 years to use that property to generate income from tourism, from agriculture, whatever. This is where they came up with the billions of dollars that this family would have received if that property was not taken.
Yeah.
And I think it was like, it was Brewster's, what was it?
Bruce's Beach.
Beach.
Yep.
And I think it was located near Huntington Beach in California.
That's it.
In Los Angeles.
Jim Crow laws did it to it.
Yeah. Yeah. The white community.
I didn't think Jim Crow would be in California.
Oh my God, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's everywhere.
I thought that was like the,
in the deep
diversity
south,
land.
In the deep, deep south. Well, you know, they still had pockets of it, right? Yeah. You know, everybody said, man, you know, if you want
Sunny California, come
opportunity,
here for
you know, yeah, go to Southern California. But still, just like anywhere else, there were probably a group of people, white people, that may have come from the south as well and wanted to bring those kinds of laws to California. And like I say, I heard the story on NPR where as far as they would, because, you know, it was during a time where black folks couldn't frequent a lot of other the white attractions that were, you know, available. So they created this own Brewster's Beach where they would have entertainment, swimming, dining. That and, you know, it was just like up in north from Baldwin, right,
yeah,
where Idlewild people used to go. The same thing. And the white folks seen this and they said, no, we can't have that. So they would actually blockade the beach. They even burned homes that were on Brewster's Beach during this time, man. It was a bad situation. One of the other ones that we don't hear about, right? I mean, there's hundreds. You know, we hear about the Black Wall Street, Rosewood. And this is just another one of those episodes that NPR decided to do the work and bring to the attention of the American public.
Yeah, that's right. And also, and I know I got this article in front of me, but I know I listen to Michigan Public Radio also, but they talked about the George Forrest family. And he had a great-great-grandmama or somebody that owned over 500 acres of land. And then this is what the researchers said. If George Floyd would have access to that 500 acres, what do you think he'd be doing?
He wouldn't have been
Might be a CEO of a company. He wouldn't be George Floyd on the street with the $20 bill.
No.
So if everybody want to paint him out to be a criminal, who's the real criminal here?
Oh, man, come on. That's another story for another show.
500 acres, I mean, I could be tilling some of that land. I could put a crop on there, and you'll never know who George Floyd is. You probably see him on a magazine as one of the top black farmers in the country.
Hundreds of stories, man, about black sharecroppers, right? Black sharecroppers, you know, went into agreement.
Took 500 acres from her.
Hey, man, like I said, that was not an uncommon practice where they, you know, the white owner would deed over the property to the black family, and then the city would come along and just take it. They sharecropped it, right? And then they would just come and take the land. And that happened so many times. So like I say, that's another story for another episode, but, you know, it happened way too often, yeah, man.
And then it just gets me to the point of, like, this word here, opportunity zone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, looking at how the Brewster's Beach is done, how cities are built. And when you talk about opportunity zone, it's always these ways of saying, all right, let's figure out how to help the rich, help the underserved community. But a lot of times, they don't make it underserved. They gentrify it instead. Mm-hmm. They say, no, we're not going to build no affordable housing. We're going to build a Ritz-Carlton. And we're going to tear these projects down, and we're going to build these nice luxury hotels or these beachfront condos for $1 million. And I'm going to put my investment in this. I ain't going to build no house for nobody live in that can't afford. Like, no, I ain't making no money off of that.
But even with that, there's still, even when you talk about building affordable housing, the bottom line is still profits, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's
no
still making profit out of it.
Yeah.
The builder. But
not the profit they want.
Yeah.
When
it comes to
the Ritz-Carlton or the Hiltons.
Nope. Mm-mm. Because of the value, right? They're going to get money off the value of the property that they own. But still, you're right. It's sort of like a tokenism. Okay, we're going to throw you out a few tokens.
You're not throwing
here.
Me the token. You're trying to figure out what you can profit off the token you throw.
Yeah,
so it's
absolutely.
Like you got the benefit through the taxes. So like they say like somebody buy some stock in Apple and they like, oh, they put $1 million in it and it went to like $30 million. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you got this $29 million tax thing you about to get hit. Well, take 20 of it. I'm gonna keep 8, take 20 of it and build these properties over here.
Mm-hmm.
But build a hotel and a restaurant.
Yep.
Don't tear this neighborhood down and build a hotel and a restaurant, buy all the houses. So don't build something that's gonna help somebody sustain. Build something where I can make some more money off of.
Right.
Look what I did.
Or shelter. I'm gonna shelter some of the money that, you know, I'm gonna use this money because there's cities all across this country that's offering up all kinds of incentives to developers, right, to come in and build in our community. So these speculators hire people to just research, go out and find all these cities that we can take advantage of by buying and investing in those kinds of situations where we can make money off of it, where we can shell or shelter money. Okay, we're not. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. Okay, the bottom line is to protect the assets and the wealth that they have, but yet they need to spend the money so they don't have to pay the taxes on it. So, you know, don't get twisted that they're, you know, really doing this because they think the community has been so underserved.
Yeah, man, yeah. This time go fast, man. Well, I'm like, I was going to share what the career is changing, but I'll get to that next week. But I think the student loan thing was really important.
No doubt, man.
So you got to be on top of what's coming on. If you got any receipts or any bills, save them. Save them. Any tax records that you made student loan payments with, I'll save them. I will save all that.
Absolutely.
Before they transfer the system over. So is there anything else, Tony?
That's it, man. We'll be back next week.
All right. I'm Chauncey Williams.
I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.